Hello! Welcome along. That's a bit of a shouty start, but welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. How's my co-host Tom? How you doing, Tom?
Oh, good. Yeah, very good, thanks. Just got back from Reykjavik at the weekend, so I'm gradually warming up and defrosting.
Oh, yeah. What was it? The indoor champs?
Yeah, Reykjavik hold an international games at the start of February each year, and for the last couple of years England have sent a track and field team. They set up really nicely. It's like a mini Commonwealth Games. They've got loads of other sports, random sports. They've got like temping, bowling,
great
shooting and all sorts of stuff. But then the athletics was on Sunday, so yeah, we had a team out there. Couple of middle distance athletes, obviously, and then the sprinters and the field guy. So it's a nice trip. Yeah, quite low key, but a lovely place to go out to visit.
And how did we get on?
Very good. Yeah, very good. Particularly in the sprints and the jumps were good. The middle distance guys, Reve in the 800, she was by far the class athlete in the field. So she sort of cruised 400, and then as soon as she opened up, she was just, you know, absolute class, and she won by a mile. She's a really smooth athlete when she's running at full pace. But it's obviously for her very early in the season, so there's no need to go in there. I think she won in sort of 2:09 or something. So she, you know, there's no reason for her to go and kind of destroy herself. And then Kieran Riley in the 15. He's coached by Mark Cookaway, really lovely lad. A talented kid, and he had a solid run considering it's February. So yeah, no, it was all round really good.
And it was good to be indoors rather than outside in Reykjavik. I can't imagine it's very weather's too conducive.
Yeah, it was. I saw that there was some of the longer distance guys out in a half marathon in Barcelona that looked it altogether warmer. But in Reykjavik at this time of year, it definitely pays to be indoors.
Yeah. So, like, what other things about you? You managed to get some running done. Did you get out and have a jog in on the streets of Iceland?
Yeah, like, that's definitely something that I'm sure most people listening to this will really appreciate. It's lovely. It's funny when you go away with a track and field team, because you realise one of the main benefits, or a big benefit of being a long distance runner, is you can go out on a training run, you can see so much of a place. You know, you can do running tourism and get to see all the kind of sights just out on a couple of easy runs. So yeah, I got a bit of running in. It was pretty icy underfoot, but not as bad as last year. So it was reasonable for running, and got in a couple of six, 8 mile runs, which was, if anybody's been to Reykjavik, it does cover the vast majority of the bits of Reykjavik you want to see in 8 miles. So
great. Well, I'm signed up for Berlin. We could have a Let's Get Running fast running, not showdown. It's too friendly for that.
But it's not really a showdown between me and you. Like, you could run it backwards and still beat me.
Not at the moment, to be honest. Not at the moment. Yeah, I seem to just. I think I spoke to Robbie last week about it. Just seem to get ill. Every time I put together 2 weeks of training, I'm ill for some reason. I just don't know what is going on at the moment, but. Yeah, we'll see. And I just mentioned to you off the air, I've just fallen off my bike, got a big like bruise down the side of my back, so I'm potentially gonna be out. I was running the Netherlands Championships this weekend, over 10k on the roads, which is gonna be quite good. It's a good race. It got lots of international runners come out for it. I think Callum's won it. I think Mo's won it a couple of years back. So it attracts a few Brits. I think it's Skorrel, it's called. I'm murdering the pronunciation, but it's Skorrel. I think is somewhere close to it, but it's the only like lumpy place in the Netherlands. So it's near some dunes, so there's a good bit of hill and that sort of thing. But the race is pretty pancake flat, and it usually gets quite a lot of guys. I think Bashir Ahmed usually comes across, the Belgian athlete, and a few guys from Germany. So it's a really decent standard race. And obviously I haven't run for 2 weeks. I've had the flu, which has knocked me out. So I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be out the back door, struggling around in 32, 33 minutes, I think. But, hey, it's good just to be involved these days, I think, in the competition. So I'm pleased to be doing it. Should be good.
Well, good luck. Good luck. good to see you back on the road. And I'm afraid, the colds and infections and illness are just part of the course of that. Not getting the sleep you want.
it's really funny, because this is the worst flu I think I've had in about 5 or 6 years. And lots of people, like, we've been speaking to guys at the nursery, obviously you bump into people when you drop the kids off, and everybody seems to have had it. But it's really weird, because it coincided completely with this whole furore over the coronavirus? And it was just like, oh shit, could this be actually the same thing? Because we've got a neighbor up here who's works for Shell, and he's been over in Wuhan, and he said he'd had a bit of a cold and a cold. So immediately then you put two and two together and you're thinking, oh my God, we've all got this virus and we're all going to have to take, you know, go down the hospital and get ourselves sorted out. But it's gone now. The kids are fine. I'm fine. We haven't got it. So yeah, we'll just move on. And on that note, we should move on with the show because we've got quite a lot of stuff to get through. We always start off the first month in the show. We're going to start a new topic this month. So we're going to go back through and have a look at the news from January, look at the general trends in the running world. So I guess there's a lot of things happening going on now. We're starting to kick off a few seasons, let's say. You spoke a bit about the indoors there. People are kind of gearing up. Is it a World Championship year or European Championship this year for indoors?
Well, the indoors is obviously was due to be in China. That is now up in the air, clearly.
Okay, so, yeah.
As you probably imagine, for exactly that reason.
Yeah, and so I guess what has happened is cross-country, we're still kicking off. In England over here, we had the area championships. So I've noted down the winners here from different areas. We had the Southern Championships, won by Adam Hickey for the men, Jess Gibbon for the girls. Midlands, we had victories for Omar Ahmed and Gemma Steele, former interviewee Gemma Steele. I think her episode is the most listened to episode of all time. So if you want to check that out, go back and have a look. I think it was around this time last year we spoke to Gemma, so check that out. She talked a lot about half marathoning. So if you've got a half marathon coming up, looking for some inspiration, she's a good episode to listen to. And obviously the Northerns, Callum Johnson was a winner, and Jess Judd, who's having a bit of a sparkling season there, she won the Northern Championships. We had the Bucks Championship, the University Championship this year, this month, I think last weekend. Anna Emily Muller, do you know, is she from Denmark? Do you know much about her?
Denmark, I don't know much about her, she's obviously sort of defending her title, and as I understand, she won by an absolute mile. Obviously, Hannah Irwin, who works with us at Fast Running, she had a good run, very good run, came 13th. But she said, you know, considering it was Jess Judd who came second, so she was up against some decent quality competition. But yeah, she absolutely dominated. So. I can't say I know huge amounts about her running, but highly impressive.
Well, the good thing is now Brexit's gone through, they're going to stop coming over here, taking our university titles. These foreign types coming.
Yeah, she's...
Now the deal is done, thank God for that. Bring out Farage. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good old Jess Judd would have won it. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I'm only joking. Yeah, but I'm crying. I'm crying while laughing. Unfortunately, living in the Netherlands, I'm slightly worried about my future. So yeah, we'll move on, move on. And also Mohamed, he was second. He won the men's universities title. I've seen a lot of him over here. He's been running various cross-country races over in the Netherlands. I think he won a couple over here, which is quite interesting. It's good to see guys kind of getting outside of England to try and find some good races and good opportunities. So nice one. Looks like he's in good shape. I guess the other, I didn't do a bong for that first bit of news, but the second, I'll do a bong now, like the 10 o'clock news. There's also been some fast running bong in Murugame. So obviously people are now getting on and getting ready for their marathon. So Callum Hawkins, agonizingly close to running sub 60, he ran 60.01. I think he was second or third potentially. I think it was actually third. To run half marathon to 60. What a rapid time, though. Brilliant running from Callum. He's obviously in a good shape coming into London. And Charlotte Perdue, she ran second place, 68.23, a minute and 22 seconds faster than she ran the previous year. So the women's game, the British women's marathon game, is so strong right now. It's amazing how fast these guys are running, up in their game to keep at the top of the tree. And it's going to be so interesting. We're going to come on to that a bit later about the state of British running and the state of British marathon running in a bit. So yeah, hold your horses on that. Some of the tidbits we've got, the big news, I guess, in January is the Alpha Fly ruling. So we've heard it, we've just checked it up on the internet. So you basically got it more succinctly than me, but the Alpha Fly won't be worn any longer. The Alpha Fly basically is won't be worn in championships. And what was the reason again? You said it was to do with the size of the sole and potentially the.
Yeah. So anybody who kind of wants to read about the sort of ins and outs of the ruling and kind of really get up to speed on it, all of Sean Ingle's stuff is really worth a read. It's very interesting. But yeah, I mean, I think what they put in a ban on the kind of the stack height of the shoe, which, you know, interestingly fell just a little bit bigger than the current Vaporfly, which, you know, half the running world seem to be wearing. So the sole can't be thicker than, I think it's 40 millimetres, and the Alphafly falls outside of that. And from the sort of end of April, basically athletes can't be wearing prototypes. So athletes have to be wearing shoes that are on the open market for people to buy, you know, either in shops or online or whatever. And that needs to be for at least, I think it was 4 months before they can use it in competition. So clearly that kind of impacts on the Olympics. And there's other stuff in there about, you know, how the carbon, you know, you can't have more than one kind of carbon plate or whatever in the shoe. I can't remember the exact details, but, you know, essentially what it means is that the Vaporfly, the next percent, is allowed and falls within the rules, and the Alphafly isn't. And I remember speaking to people, you know, a little way back about the Alphafly, almost, you know, being cynical, was it almost produced in the knowledge to give the IAAF something to ban? You know, like, because it's almost like producing a line in the sand and kind of going, look, here, if you want to ban something, try banning this, and then we can kind of keep the Vaporfly, because, like, people have already got it. And, you know, there are so many PBs and so many times now being running those shoes. You know, it's a minefield about how you kind of manage that ruling. And we can go into the controversies of it, but there's plenty written online about it. You only have to look at some of the stuff that, you know, Mario Mucci is saying, and then maybe look at some of the stuff that Paula is saying, and it's highly controversial. And of course, the difficult thing is you need to be able to have these objective discussions around the unquestionable impact of technology. And athletes need to be honest with themselves about that. Like, I believe that, you know, athletes, working within the rules, that's what they're doing. They're working within the rules to give themselves competitive advantage, but they also need to be honest with themselves that absolutely their hard work and performance create, you know, hard work in training and their racing results and performances, but equipment is part of that as well. But it's a very difficult conversation to have, because you also need to give athletes credit for the work that they've been doing. And I think where it related, particularly, you've probably seen the results from the weekend on the track, Gemma Riki's fantastic 800 meter time, you know, 1:57, which is a fabulous performance. A fabulous performance, you know, in any shoes, but she's wearing these, you know, Nike spikes, and immediately people came up online and started flagging that. And it's difficult because it starts to take away from these great performances, and you know, it becomes very emotionally charged conversations. So, yeah.
Well, in a sense, although some people might think that the IAAF, whatever, have fudged the issue, it's a line in the sand, right? At least there's something now what we can, you know, all companies are aware of what the rules are. There is a ruling for which to base your future developments and your future shoe models. So I guess we're in a good situation now. It's like, it's what happened has happened. We're at this position, you know, let's go free reign. I want to see mental shoes with huge springs in the front and see how fast a man can run. That's what I want to see. Let's go nuts. Let's go nuts, everybody. Let's just see what we can build.
The Dixon X percents or whatever. I think...
springs everywhere,
the
whatever.
The thing is, as soon as you put a line in the sand, somewhere it's a fudge. Of course it is. Like, somebody's, you've had to fudge, like, you've had to say, this is the line, and that's always going to upset somebody. I think the point is that if drawn a line around the next percent, which has dramatically impacted on some performances over the last few years, and that some people would have it that that line was drawn because of the influence that the company that make that particular shoe have. I think that's where the controversy comes.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what... I'm actually not sure what I feel about it. The difficult thing is when you're working with athletes, particularly high-performance athletes, mate, I'm going to be honest, I'm not... If I get back into to reasonable shape again... I'm not going to buy a pair of Next Percents to drop my like a 75 minute half marathon down to a 73. Sorry, it's just not. But if you're, that's for me, that's a personal decision. But if I'm a bloody good athlete and I'm not, and there's a difference between me getting a national vest or not, or getting selected for major championships or not, it is a more difficult decision. It absolutely is. And that's why care is required. And if you're supported by and sponsored by a company, it becomes even more difficult decisions. And I think this is why some element of rational voices and let's discuss it either way. And coaches have a discussion with your athlete and kind of recognize where performance is coming from. Because if you can see performance improving regardless of what people have got on their feet and that aids performance, that is very different to kind of pretending like somebody's training has jumped forwards just because they've changed their equipment. So all sorts of interesting conversations you can have.
Exactly.
But yeah.
I ran the London Marathon in those 40% shoes, the orange ones, and it made absolutely shit all difference to me because I wasn't in good shape. Do you know what I mean? So that's all I'll say. That's all I'll say. Yeah, but hey, modern life is challenging, right? So like, you can buy, you can make a stand. I'm not going to buy this product because Nike, I don't agree with Nike's practices. But then, are you going to watch the Premier League because? You know, it's been run away with, by Liverpool and then, questionably, I think maybe they're a bit more squeaky clean than Man City, but every single decision you make in life, there is, there's a question about it. So I don't know. Let's get, we can't spend the whole hour
ethics,
talking about this. We better move on from the alpha
pro. There's another month's theme, perhaps some other time.
I think that's a good idea. And on a high note, the British 1,000 meter record has gone. You just said the air. Did Gemma Reekie break the 800 meter British record indoors?
Under 23.
Okay. Well, the men's 1,000 meter record. Oh wow. Okay, so she's looking very good. But Jake Whiteman, he's now the fastest British man to run 1,000 meters in. Under four walls and a roof, which is quite exciting. 2:17:50 odd. Wow, that's really quick. I don't think I've ever really gone out and tried to smash a K, but I'd reckon 2:30 would be my absolute limit. And even that, 2:30 probably high would be anything close to reaching 2:17:50. Amazing. So well done to Jake for that. In the Dubai Marathon, did you catch up with this? Did you see the men's finish?
Yeah.
Incredible to run. 42 kilometers, and then there's, I think, the top 10 were within 16 seconds of each other. So it's 2:06:15, and the 10th place was 2:06:31. What an incredible! Imagine getting to that point and having to get involved with the sprint finish.
And he was saying,
Jesus,
I think some of the guys at the back of that didn't earn any prize money. So,
no,
you run that kind of, and obviously the thing with Dubai is, I think the prize money if you win is huge, really big, but I think it tapers off really quickly. So I'm not, listeners will completely correct me if I'm wrong, of course they will, but I'm pretty sure one or two of the guys at the back of that little group didn't win any prize money.
The incentive
was high, I think, to sprint hard.
Yeah, and it's basically like an Ethiopian championship. I think nine of the top 10 in both male and female races were Ethiopians, which is just nuts. I think the women's race was more clear cut. We had a lady, I haven't got the results in front of me here, who ran 2:19:30 odd, and then the nearest finisher then was 2:20. But incredible. I do have a personal connection to Tezadat Abehi Ayana, who I probably butchered his name. He's the winner of the Seville Marathon. I trained with him a couple of times. That's my only connection to him. But he's a lovely little fella. He is short. I'm disparagingly calling him lovely and little, but he's an absolute monster. I did a 2.5 hour hill session with him once. I was only there for a couple of weeks, but he gave me an absolute shooing, as you'd imagine a 2:06 runner would give a man who struggled around in 2:25. But he was really nice. I know he's good friends of Mike Crawley, and Mike's a great guy. So yeah, congratulations to him. Third place. Nice bit of money for him.
Training diary, hey. I circled that, those sessions with you, as key moments in athletic development.
Absolutely, yeah. He said there was a guy behind me like making weird noises because he was out of breath. Yeah, as he was calling. I think, to be honest, the we weren't supposed to do the hill session. We went down to the track, which is right in the middle of Addis, and this guy, the coach, who was a bit, I think they weren't sure about him, the athletes, and he claimed that he knew Haile Gebrselassie and that Haile was going to meet us at the track and let us into the track. And I was really excited getting down there, and we arrived, and lo and behold, no Haile Gebrselassie. So he like. The coach had to think on the hoof, and he was like, let's go up the hill to Zandafa. Or no, is it Zandafa? Oh, I can't remember. And we went up this hill, and he kind of just said, right, we're going to do 20 times this big climb. And then we did it. We kept churning this out. And after 2.5 hours, we were still doing it because the climb was so long. And it was all of us at the end, every single athlete there was just like absolutely screwed. And we were like, I don't think you were supposed to do that long a hill session, the coach. But he was like, yeah, this was all after, in the plan.
After he'd let everybody know, he couldn't go back and go, sorry, lads, I think I slightly misjudged the volume. That's what I planned. 2.5 hours of effort.
Yeah.
Longer than, 20 minutes longer than most of you are going to run a marathon. So just keep going.
Yeah, up a hill, crazy. Anyway, which brings us on to our new feature. Well, there's no link, but anyway, we're moving on to our new feature or our feature we've had the last couple of months. Fastest park run of the month. Building on your obviously Fast Running's coverage of the quickest park runs each week. I've trawled through the articles and I've got the fastest park runs this month. We actually had a women's world record this month, I think, with Jenny Nesbitt. She ran 15:54 at Cardiff Park Run, which has since been broken by Charlotte Arter. But obviously she's in February, so we're not going to mention her name on this particular account. So the winner for the women was 15:54, incredible run by Jenny Nesbitt, interviewed a couple of weeks back, so go and have a listen to that. For the men, we had an equal first, Jonathan Hopkins, a very quick run at 14:42 from Swansea. He ran that at Porth. Oh no, he's Cardiff, sorry. At Porth Call, and Alex Tooten ran at Southsea. He ran 14:42. Good to see Alex Tooten coming back.
Yeah, those are, I mean,
fantastic.
The South Coast produces some good runners, Southampton in particular. So, yeah.
You know, I was going to say, I remember when I first saw Alex Tooten. So, when I was running quite well, I'd had a good year. And then the next year, Alex Tooten started coming through. And I remember him looking at him. He used to wear board shorts. And he just used to look so ungainly. And now I remember being beaten by him. The first time I got beaten by him, and I was like, how could I have lost to this fella wearing board shorts? He just looks, he did not look like a runner at all. And then he went on to be like, you know, GB, cross country runner and all that sort of thing. And now he looks pretty, you know, he's managed to refine his style and he looks pretty smooth as he runs. But yeah, I initially, he's one of those characters you just thought, how on earth can I lose to this man?
But nothing worse than being beaten by somebody
wearing board
shorts. Listen, it's happened to me far more times
that happens
than
to me
it's
a
happened
lot,
to
yeah.
you, I can assure you of that.
I'll never get over it, Tom. Never. Anyway. But this brings, okay, we haven't actually announced kind of our focus this month. We've done a couple, obviously, diversity was our first focus a couple of months back in December. And last month we talked a bit about depression, running, and I guess mental health. So some good shows there, some great feedback from everybody. This month we're making it very specific. We're talking about marathons. So the reason why we've done that is obviously February, a lot of listeners now will be kind of gearing up for Spring Marathon Tilt. You'll be looking to get your plans in order, get your training going to start building up towards a marathon. So we wanted to kind of give some good tidbits so you guys can help you in your marathon quest. But also it's a good time to look at British marathon running in the lead up to obviously the championships this summer, but also the qualifying race at London Marathon this year. Look at how things are going, what we're excited about, and generally discuss that. So have you got any guys training for marathons coming up this spring, Tom?
It's a busy time for you to this spring. Probably 60% of the people on coaching will be doing a marathon this spring.
And what's February then? What does February mean to you in terms of of coaching. What's the focus this month?
Sort of like, it's that month where you're sort of transitioning into a more specific phase of training, I would say. So, you know, obviously for more experienced athletes, training is a continuous sort of process. So they're not working off a 16-week training plan where you kind of start on week one and finish at a marathon on week 16 or 24 weeks, whatever it is. You know, these training phases somewhat sort of blend together, but they also don't always need quite as long a kind of a really specific marathon phase of work, because there's a lot of groundwork in place, there's years worth of running, and the risk is that they sort of overcook themselves. So it always tends to be that February is that kind of shift towards doing more marathon specific work. Obviously different with different athletes, different with different coaches as well, you know, depending on how they do things. But for me, it's always that like transition month. And it can be quite a tricky month because you know, a lot of people beginning to race, but it's also a time when you might still be racing cross country, or you might do quite an early half marathon, and you're just getting your body used to doing some longer long runs again, so you're carrying a bit of fatigue, and sometimes they go really well. I mean, you've seen obviously Callum and Charlotte Purdue's half marathons recently, that they weren't quite PBs, but they, you know, were as good as, you know, whereas I think some people, it's about chalking that sort of stuff up on the board, and it may not be necessarily spectacular at this stage, but you're just beginning to get into that work and dialing in a little bit more around marathon effort, you know, and building those longer sessions now.
Yeah. And it's hard to kind of like talk about marathon philosophies, right? Do you think, I mean, is there certain schools you bracket stuff into, and do you have one philosophy for training, or is it like when you're dealing with different people, you have to have different approaches for how they focus on the race?
Yeah, I think there's an element of having some principles that you believe in, but how they play out is really different for different athletes. I tend to, with any kind of planning cycle, I tend to look at the demands of, I start with your training plan is a meeting point between the individual athlete you've got in front of you and the demands of the event they're training for. So running 26 miles hard has a particular set of physiological demands, but that's not the only aspect, because the physiological demands of somebody running, you know, a female running a 2.5 hour marathon are quite different to the sorts of demands that somebody running 4 hours for a marathon might be. And you need to kind of consider those, you know, a marathon that may happen in the heat. A marathon, if you're somebody who's pushing to get a spot on a major championship team where actually you're not only looking to get a time, but the chances are you're going to have to race for a finishing place. Do you have the ability to cope with pace surges? You know, do you have the ability to cope with somebody deciding to blow the race apart by going out hard early? You know, do you have the ability to run with a pacemaker? That sort of stuff. So, but kind of looking at all those demands, sitting down and really thinking about what that needs to be, what you're actually trying to do, like with the elite athletes, what pace you're trying to run and how economically you're running at that pace. Match that against where they are now, and that might be a process that happened a year before or 4 months before, whatever it is. And then the training plan is how you kind of get from one to the other. In terms of philosophy, I would say that there's far more schools of thought than this. This is like, and if you go and, you know, if you're interested in running, go and read about the kind of legends of coaching, go and read about Lydiard, go and read like Jack Daniels, go and read kind of these guys who, and understand why that, you may not agree with it, but try to understand why it was that they set the stuff that they set. Look at some of the coaches in the States. Look at Brad Hudson. Why is he doing what he's doing? That sort of stuff. And then you kind of, like all things, you nick bits that you think make sense and that slot in and it may work for an individual athlete, but you craft it and shape it for you and that individual athlete. I'd say right now, there's probably, you've got coaches who maybe do a lot of what I call like threshold and tempo work. So you might do a lot of marathon pace running. You might do a lot of running around lactate threshold. So, you know, let's say for the sake of argument, it's like a pace you could hold for about an hour. you know, 15K race pace, an hour, 10 mile race pace, half marathon race pace, that kind of threshold tempo area. And they work that zone quite a lot between those two. And then you've got coaches who kind of follow the more Steven Seiler approach. He's a physiologist in Norway who studied a lot of the best marathon runners in the world. So a lot of the Kenyan guys, and he looked at their training and said, but they don't do much of that. They don't actually do much of that traditional stuff we tend to do a lot of in the UK. They polarize their training a lot more. So they do a lot of easy running. And then when they do their hard sessions, they're working generally harder than the threshold. So they're working 90, 95% max heart rate, 5K, 10K type reps, long repetition sort of stuff. And if you kind of follow his ideas, that's people who have read the kind of 80-20 type training. That's like the consumer version of it, you know, the stuff that's sold in a book. If you follow that training philosophy, if you do loads of stuff around threshold and tempo, you deaden your adaptive response. Like, and over time, it's a great way to overtrain an athlete. Now, the difficult thing with that is most people want to stand on the start line of a marathon having done marathon pace work and work to kind of improve their running economy around marathon pace. So what I tend to do, if I have any kind of philosophy at all, I would say, which I'm not sure I do particularly, I just have a few principles, but it's largely down to the individual athlete. I'd say I kind of move, I would move towards from a more general approach that might be a bit more polarized to a more specific approach, which probably comes slightly less polarized, but only in the last, you know, maybe 6, 8, 10 weeks worth of training where I definitely do a little bit more, you know, marathon pace work, tempo running. So what I don't want to do is keep an athlete doing tempo running the whole year round, because I do believe that there is a stack of evidence to show that that can really, is a great way to overtrain an athlete and a great way to eventually start to like deaden an adaptive response. But if you periodize your training right through the year, then actually I think that is important, because it can kind of help you dial into marathon pace. It's obviously building specific running economy around your marathon pace. So I kind of go from, if you think of it like a pyramid, kind of general training down to specific training. The general training is a bit more polarized. The specific training kind of working that around, you know, bigger sessions that work either side of marathon pace, really. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I remember certainly when I tried to do it, I did... for Frankfurt a couple of years, which I documented obviously on the show, I spoke to Nate Jenkins, and obviously Nate Jenkins is an American guy. He ran, I think, 2:12, 2:14, based upon a Canova kind of style of training. So that'd be more looking at that more threshold based sort of stuff. And so I did a lot of that. And I think my problem was I kind of overcooked it. So I was running pretty well. I started 16 weeks sort of bringing that sort of work in. And in the end, I probably peaked about 3 or 4 weeks too early. And whether that was, I was running myself into the ground a bit with baby coming and work and everything else. So, you know, there's other factors that are involved in that thing, but certainly it was maybe a little bit too long, in terms of the running at that kind of peak marathon pace efforts and long, hard efforts. So, I think you're definitely right there in terms of not doing that for too long.
You know, if you're going to do sessions that are 10, 15 miles worth of quality plus, they need a lot of recovery time. So what it does is, if you're going to do that, you have to be prepared to break the mold of a traditional Western way of stretching training on a 7-day week. Because if you go and do a session that is huge, like in and out K reps, where you're stacking up, you know, 20 plus K repetitions of kind of going a little bit harder than, a little bit easier than a marathon pace, or even a little bit harder than that, that needs a lot of respect. Like, that it might take you 3, 4 easy days plus afterwards, and that kind of really breaks the mold of the way that we tend to structure training, which is in these really rigid cycles where you might go, like, you know, I know some coaches still who will set 3 hard sessions a week in marathon cycles. I think that's pretty tough for most people. You know, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday plus long run, I think that is pretty tough. I think what tends to be, if you're going to be doing those bigger sessions, you're going to do marathon specific work, probably Tuesday, Friday, Sunday is a split that works for a lot of people. But you don't really, it's only our work lives that means that we're confined by that 7 day week. So, you know, we're trying to cram in a long run somewhere, and it tends to be on a day when we've got most time, but our body doesn't really, that's like practical reasons why we do that, but our body doesn't work on a 7 day cycle particularly. So the problem is we tend to not be good at being responsive. So if you've done this really big beast of a session, if it takes 4 days of easy running to recover, take the 4 days of easy running to recover, because unless you recover properly, you're not going to absorb all of the fitness from that session anyway. And that's where I think it requires more of a flexible approach if you're going to do those really big sessions. I think it can be really good. And if you see some of the cottage guys, Dave Morgan and Dave Chalfin, they come up with, certainly the last couple of years, a set of quite kind of very marathon specific sessions that build up, and they can be highly effective sessions. They just need respect, and they just need recovery, and they also need you to not chase the pace on them. You know, like, you need to be realistic. It's, you know, if you're a 2:45 marathon runner and you're a 3:15 marathon runner and you're trying to run them at 2:45 pace, then they become, eventually they're just going to see your body break down, you know.
And I think it's hard, like, a lot of people, marathons are big, everyone wants to run a good marathon, right? So if you're a runner and you talk to a layman, the first question they're going to ask you is you've run a good marathon. But it's like, some people just aren't suited to that sort of thing. Like, I found it quite difficult. I'm a cross-country runner, really. I like things about 12, I like running for about 40 minutes hard. I love that sort of thing. It's absolutely perfect for me. It suits me down to the ground. I find it really hard to almost go and, like you say, to do those kind of sessions and almost park your ego and just get into a level of discomfort that you can hold for a period of time and just hold it, not pushing too hard, not trying to overreach yourself. It's quite a skill to be able to develop that. Some people just haven't got that. And it is a hard thing to train. And if that's the way you're built, that's just the way they're built. I'm sure you can train it, and I'm sure you can improve your ability to do it. But it is it's a toughie, really.
Look at somebody like Johnny Hay, a real class athlete, fabulous. Those couple of years when he ran a marathon, you know, he was having some fantastic results over cross country, and he ran sort of, you know, 2:23, 2:24, which, don't get me wrong, clearly that's a good time, but clearly Johnny was capable of going, you know, much, much quicker than that. And it can have a tough time in two or three races, and you start to learn what approach works for you. So it's not all about physiology. Some of it's just about learning from your mistakes and learning what training approach works for you. And if you work with a coach, you know, working with them to kind of look through, you know, what are our training options? How might we do things differently? And the danger sometimes is you just keep plugging away doing the same stuff, and it doesn't work, and it doesn't work, and it doesn't work. And, you know, there are other events. There's other stuff you can do. And sometimes taking away kind of a break from the marathon and learning to race over different distances and maybe race a little bit more frequently can be quite a healthy thing to do. You know?
Yeah. One thing I think I do think is important, like I guess not for people who are really, you know, people at the higher standard will know this, but for those of you probably maybe are searching for times around 3 hours and stuff, the importance of strides and importance of mechanics, even though you're doing like a long distance event, and it's a basic point to make, but obviously we've got a range of people listening to the show. If you're going to do one thing, don't forget to include that sort of stuff in your training, because it's vitally important. You look at people like Kenenisa Bekele running 2:03, 2:02. He's sprinting every day, and he's a full on marathon runner.
Yeah,
so
you read.
Yeah, don't forget
that
stuff.
That absolutely relates, and a lot of this stuff relates. No matter what kind of time you're looking to run, obviously, like with some of the guys running slower than 4 hours, and I do coach some of those guys. They're got to think what is required, like what's the minimum effective dose of training required to get the result that they want, because, you know, they're not, it's physiologically very probably capable of doing very high volumes of training, but you've got to match the training to what somebody's goals and ambitions and what they're prepared to sacrifice, because we've got busy lives, families and everything else. And actually sometimes I'd say with training, and definitely with some of the quality sessions, sometimes you have to kind of go, well, what is the minimum required to result in the adaptation that I want to happen, you know. And the temptation sometimes with a marathon is always to go beyond, because the fear of the distance kind of makes you go, oh, just one more session or just a bit more to prove that I'm ready, because the fear of the distance just keeps you kind of pressing at it and kind of going, no, I've got to prove it to myself. And actually, you know what, you're not going to prove it to yourself till race day, and sometimes you have to trust that you've done enough. And that you, sometimes, to be honest, you're better to be 5 to 10% undertrained than 1% overtrained. The marathon, I reckon, if you're overtrained, the marathon is the one event that will always catch you out. Always, like, it's so unforgiving of being of going in tired that it's you know you sometimes better to play it on the safe side. But yeah.
Well, we were going to have a discussion about like how. Like the state of British running, but I think this is, we almost like it will take a show of its own to discuss how it's going. But we should like touch on it briefly, because it's going to be really exciting to see everyone going at it in London. Particularly the women, like the standards have just jumped in the last couple of years. Obviously, Steph Twell moving to the marathons, a big draw. Jess Pazecki, I'm going to keep pronouncing her name wrong. Sorry, Jess, if I have. She's managing to get it together. She's managing to get past her injury problems and put together good races. Charlotte Purdue, obviously, her progression coming through. I think Lily Partridge still hasn't quite nailed it for the last couple of years. She's obviously a talented runner. There's so many runners that are gunning for Tokyo. It's going to be absolutely nuts to see what will happen there. And with the men, I guess, with Mo deciding he's not going to do this marathon thing, there's... If the men can get, obviously Callum's already been selected, but there's a few other slots there, and there's a lot of guys gunning for those times, and it's, we're now in a position where they can make those times.
So I was going to say that's the difference, is that, you know, British athletics for a number of years, or it's like selection criteria for a number of years, particularly the men, have been you know, harsh and probably beyond some of the athletes' abilities to do it, or at least not abilities, but where they're at with their training. Now there are guys that have a genuine shot, and trust me, they're not all wearing Vaporflies. In fact, actually, when you look at it, most of them aren't. Of them aren't in that top 5, 6, 7 guys. But when you look at, you've got, yeah, we know about Callum. Obviously, Dowie's got some injury issues, but Johnny Mellor's there, Derek Hawkins, you know, Matt Clowes. There's some... You know, and there's a load of other guys gone under 2:15. Like, and that hasn't happened for years. What, 12 guys gone sub 2:15 last year. And as you say, the women, Jill Bland, put together a kind of a nice piece on Fast Running about the state of British women's distance running, marathon running. And it's good. It's a really good overview. And yeah, it's really exciting times. As you say, Charlotte's, we know how well she's running. Steph Twell has been, you know, up there as a top athlete since a junior, and she looks after her own training, and it clearly seems to be working incredibly well for her. Lily has been suffering with some nerve issues and sciatica, but she showed, you know, recently in her half that is all still in there. And actually, if her body is sort of cooperative, she's a huge danger. And you've got Steph Davis running really well. You know, Tracy Barlow's still there. You've got a load of other guys. Natasha Cockrum's run close to 2:30 now. There's a load of other women there who, you know, basically 2:29 is not going to get you to an Olympic. 2:29:30, which is the standard, is not going to get you to an Olympic Games anymore. And I think that has really, really changed, and it's really shifted on. So London's going to be
amazing.
A straight shootout between quite a lot of people, and it could be very exciting. Yeah.
I think one name before we leave, my bet is Hickey. Adam Hickey. Coached by Emma Martin. Yeah, anyway, we'll leave it
there. He's got a coach there who knows all about marathon running, and we always think for his name when it kind of comes to cross-country season, but that guy is strong, mate. It shows. The fact that he is so strong when it comes to cross-country season, he has got what it takes to be a top marathon runner, and like, Eamon knows his stuff, doesn't he? So, clearly.
He knows
all about how to win marathons. He won the London Marathon, for those of you listening who don't know.
Last English winner, I think. Last English winner. Yeah. Anyway, right, I've got to go get my daughter. I'd love to chat about marathons all day, but we want to hear from you guys. So get in touch. The number you send through is on the show notes. If you go to letsgetrunning.co.uk/podcast, check out Fast Running this week. Some good, you said the Jill Bland article's up there about the state of British, women's distance running. Good to check that one out. Yeah, share the show. We love it. Send us a review. Always nice to hear from you. And send us your marathon questions. Send us your marathon tips, anything like that. We're keen to hear. Questions particularly good. We're going to do that on the fourth show of the month. So any marathon questions you've got for Tom or myself, get them in there. Robbie will give his two penneth. Is that a phrase? Anyway, I said it. It's out there. So yeah, good stuff. We'll have a good couple of weeks, Tom. We're going to catch up again for the fourth show. And it'd be good to speak to you then.
Sean, enjoy your 10K, race hard.
Yeah. Nice one. Cheers, Tom.
Cheers, bye.